Welcome to Mind Your Biz Today on South Florida's only all-business radio station, 880 AM. Today's business world is fast-paced and ever-changing. Gain a competitive advantage by listening to Mind Your Biz Today, hosted by Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage. Janie is a best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire with over 35,000 hours consulting C-suite executives. She will help you navigate today's business hurdles and maximize your opportunities with thought-provoking discussions with CEOs, business authors, and thought leaders. Learn the latest trends and profit-producing ideas for growing your business. Here's your host, Janie Smith.
Mind Your Biz Today is brought to you by Vistage, the world's leading CEO organization whose member companies outperform the market. Visit Vistage.com today.
Happy to be back. I just got back from Milwaukee. I was up there speaking, and some of you may have heard about the Midwest storms. I was up there in 70-mile-an-hour winds, and for a South Floridian to be in Category 2 winds in an environment where there's no shutters, it was pretty exciting. Anyway, we're really glad to be back in Florida. South Florida listeners, we've got a terrific show for you today, and we want to thank Vistage as our sponsor, the CEO organization with 14,000 CEOs. They've just been terrific. For our listeners, and I want to remind you to please go to mindyourbiztoday.com and give us your comments and certainly your suggestions for any kind of show that would help you grow your business. We're all about helping you grow your business, be a better leader, be a better manager, and get your business up to the very next level. You know, it's sort of interesting. Somebody recently asked me about our theme song, which is Wipeout. And the idea is not for you to wipe out, for you to wipe out your competition. And you can do that by enhancing your skills, your business management abilities, and using some of the tools that we provide you every week at Friday on Mind Your Biz Today. So I want to get to our show because this is a really exciting topic we have today, and we have a wonderful expert with us. Leadership, the psychology of leadership, you know, every single person that runs a business that has more than one employee must have an awareness of how they lead, how their leadership affects their employees, and how it creates a culture. And as some of our regular listeners know, I have been a consultant for over 20 years and have accumulated over 35,000 hours sitting with business leaders. So I can tell you that in those 35,000 hours with hundreds of CEOs of small, medium-sized businesses, I have seen every imaginable leadership style, leadership cultures. I've seen the rewards and the ramifications of different leadership styles. And so let's learn a little bit today from our guest, Bill Anton, who's with us today from Tampa. And let me tell you a little bit about Bill, and then I'll welcome him to the show. Bill Anton is a PhD. He's the founder of CEOEffectiveness.com and is currently president and CEO of Anton Holdings. He advises CEOs, directors, and senior business leaders on people and company cultural issues. He talks about the scientific studies on the neuroscience of leadership, which have indicated that most people bring only 10 to 30% of their available energy to work. Can you imagine? They're leaving 70% of their available energy at home. That's pretty scary to anybody owning a business and trying to manage people. So what he's going to tell us is how do we recapture that energy today? And how do we get the most productivity and enthusiasm out of the folks that work in organizations? So, Bill, welcome to the show. We're really glad you can join us at Mind Your Biz.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be on the show.
Well, thanks. So let's just start. I've got a few questions for you to get the ball rolling, and then we'll just kind of take it from there. So first, let's just start with, why is leadership psychology so important in creating organizational culture?
Well, because I think that the leader of an organization really sets the upper limit on what's attainable in the organization, because the leader is really in a position of the greatest leverage. And she or she has the greatest influence on the organizational culture.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes say that another way when I'm working with CEOs who say, come on in and help as a consultant fix my people. I always say, no, we don't fix the people. We fix you because all crumbs lead to the top, right?
That's very insightful because if CEO self-knowledge really is a minimum requirement for really having an influence that's positive on the culture of an organization.
You know, one of the things I see repeatedly in my practice over the years is that organizations just seem to go stale. And they can be stale for many, many years. I mean, I've seen organizations that, oh, I don't know, $5 million in revenue, and they're $5 million in revenue for 20, 25 years, and they haven't grown one bit. They seem to have hit their glass ceiling, which is usually the result of the CEO. So what do you think keeps business leaders from implementing change that will contribute to their success?
Well, in some ways, the short answer is relative success, that they're getting enough mileage out of their information processing system to achieve some success, but it pales in comparison to what they're capable of. You know, for example, if we take a computer, the source code might be thought of as what the computer is really capable of, and software is what can be interpreted by the source code. But as a result of living, our source code is infected with viruses and worms and all kinds of things. And as a result of that, we don't really have access to the source code to take full advantage of the software. That creates a company that pales in comparison to what its potential would be if we could clean up the viruses and the worms in the source code.
So the viruses and the source codes, let me jump ahead and make an assumption, and you can tell me if I'm headed down the right track. Is that the baggage that we bring, the emotional baggage that everybody brings into the workplace that they're dealing with on all kinds of psychological levels that get in the way of this kind of success?
Yes, I think in some ways, as we're evolving throughout our life, or, you know, starting with our earliest experiences, we develop mental models that make sense of our world. The problem is that those mental models often involve compromises where we cut parts of ourselves off. Now, you know, many people don't realize this, but Beethoven was beaten daily by his father. And, of course, he achieved a great deal in the musical world. But the rest of his life was pretty much the kind of life that none of us would want to experience. This often happens with people for whom overachievement is really at the expense of other areas of the personality. The problem is that those other areas or those neglected parts of ourselves often influence the people in the workforce and our direct reports, and analogously or eventually it influences the whole culture of a company.
So that sounds a lot like the group of folks out in Hollywood that we read about every day who have achieved amazing success, and yet they are constantly sabotaging themselves over and over again.
Yep, they're perfect examples. And you know, even when we read a book like Good to Great, you know, if you look at many of those Good to Great companies now, they're not in existence, you know.
Yeah.
and there's like a silent force there. And the silent force is that the vision of many of these companies was determined by people and how those people were selected and what culture operated and how free they were to influence and redesign their mission all had a significant impact on how much their own resistance to change.
That's very interesting, because in the news lately we've been reading Warren Buffett has selected his successor. And no matter who he picks and how perfect they may or may not be in his eyes, you know, I don't think that people are going to have the same confidence, because Warren Buffett had one model, and whoever this individual is, we subconsciously, you know, are saying to ourselves, we don't know his model yet, do we? He may be really good at the numbers, but we don't know what he brings with him.
Right. The best person to select is someone that's not limited by their model, but sees their model as somewhat encumbering, and who's focused on learning more about themselves in order to be more flexible in considering alternative models, especially those that are aligned with business success.
So that requires a fair amount of self-knowledge. What is self-knowledge? How would you describe it?
Well, I guess following through on the kinds of things that we've talked about, I would say that, you know, self-knowledge is basically making your tacit mental models conscious, and applying that knowledge to understanding how your mind works. You know, for example, if an executive has a deeply embedded insecurity based on some early loss in their life, like, let's say, the traumatic death of a parent, they might tacitly create instability in their organization in order to account for unsafe feelings that they're unwilling to face in themselves. In this case, they might even hire a consultant or structure their assignment, the consultant's assignment, to further disrupt the organization in accordance with the leader's desire not to become aware of their own internal pain.
Wow, I have seen that happen before. That's an interesting way. I mean, to put it in everyday lingo, you're saying self-knowledge is about being aware of your stuff and owning your stuff.
Yeah, especially the stuff that many people are unaware of in themselves. Yeah,
yeah.
That's a good way to say it.
So why do you think a leader's level of self-knowledge is critical to formulating an effective business strategy? I have to know what I'm about, what gets in my way, and now I want to plan a business strategy. Why are they connected?
Well, I mean, a leader should really be a calming influence on an organization, not a disruptive influence. And so that doesn't mean lack of energy or drive, but it means not contributing to unnecessary suffering in the organization, so that the leader that knows themselves is more likely to have a realistic picture of their organization and their direct reports. And when that person at the top knows themselves as they are, which incidentally is the definition of humility, then they have the greatest access to their own ability, and they can see more clearly what needs to be done and how to best accomplish it.
Well, this is great, Bill. We're getting ready for a commercial break in about a minute, so I just want to wrap up a little bit here, and we'll be back with you after the commercial break because I have a whole bunch more questions. This is such an interesting topic. I just, you know, as we wrap up here, I have seen so many leadership styles. I've seen CEOs who go from abdicating to over-control to abdicating. I've seen the dictators and the people-pleasers. And what's so interesting to me is they can be the yin and the yang. One month they're the people-pleaser, the next month they're the dictator. And then there's the ones that want to be the buddy or the boss and, you know, demanding to be recognized as the boss. So they're all of that stuff manifests itself in different ways. So we're getting ready for a commercial break. We want to thank Vistage. We're going to go off and do that. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes, reminding our listeners to please go to mindyourbiztoday.com. Give us your thoughts, your comments, and certainly any requests for show topics for the coming weeks. We'd love to hear from you. So with that, we'll be back with Bill Anton, who's in Tampa, in just a few minutes. Please stay tuned, South Florida. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with Mind Your Biz Today and Janie Smith after this word from our sponsors.
As the CEO, are you avoiding tough decisions? How can you do more with less? Who do you turn to for real advice? What do 14,000 companies who have unparalleled access to new business perspectives, innovative strategies, and actionable ideas have in common? Vistage. Vistage is the world's leading CEO organization who offers their members business coaching benefits not available anywhere else. To see if you qualify for membership in Vistage, Florida, contact Chip Webster at 1-800-733-4832 or visit Vistage.com today.
Here is Janie Smith with Mind Your Biz Today.
Welcome back, South Florida. This is Janie Smith, your host. I am the author of Creating Competitive Advantage, and we're going to continue our interview here with Bill Anton, who comes to us from Tampa. And Dr. Bill, I got to meet him when I was over in Tampa recently. He's just fascinating. And I love his study of work. So we're talking about the psychology of leadership and how that affects you if you're growing a business, from anything from small to large business, or if you're a leader inside of another organization. Leadership and self-knowledge go hand in hand to be effective. So, Bill, I have a couple more questions for you. I think that it's so interesting, this subject of self-knowledge, because over the years I have, as I said, coached scores of CEOs, and some of them have terrific self-knowledge. And I love what you said before the break about humility. The ones that have the most humility, I do find, tend to be the most successful.
Yeah. And humility and passion are closely linked.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about humility says I don't have a gigantic ego, because we all know the gigantic ego only can get in the way, because it manifests itself in so many different ways. So what is the relationship between self-knowledge, motivation, and performance?
Well, in some ways, self-knowledge is generally associated with optimal levels of performance. You know, although the effects of self-knowledge, you know, can differ depending on what a person's dealing with, it's unlikely that genuine self-knowledge would ever negatively affect performance. In many ways, self-knowledge is associated with bearing the ways in which we're displeasing to ourselves and not letting it get in the way of other relationships. And, you know, once that's in place, the stage is set for people to be at their best. Creative tension, increased energy, and innovation are born in environments headed by these types of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you something. I recently heard a speaker talk about emotional intelligence. Are we talking about a similar thing here, the ability to understand where I may overreact or where I might have... They actually did one of these profiles on everybody in this executive group I'm involved in, and I scored over the top for empathy. That can be both a good thing and a bad thing, and being aware of where it's good and where it's bad has really heightened my awareness around that. So are we talking about a similar thing, this emotional intelligence thing that books have been written about?
Yeah, well, I think emotional intelligence is really sort of a prerequisite to what we're talking about, because you really have to observe the ways in which your mind works, the areas where you tend to overreact or underreact, and that's certainly a first step. But, you know, getting back to your original comment about neuroscience, you know, our old habits and our mental models are really neurological. They're actually connections in our brain that make those habits replay over and over again. But there's a wonderful area of the brain called the frontal lobes that has the capacity to override prior learning. And to me, that emotional intelligence is becoming aware of the ways in which your emotions limit you, but also becoming aware that there's certain things a leader can do to override those limitations.
Well, what is the best way to improve performance then? How do you override them?
Well, some of the things that leaders can actually do is, you know, one thing is to develop a habit of making the default in your life doing the harder thing, not the easier thing. So that if, for example, you're disappointed with a direct report and your usual response is to chew them out, is to restrain that and to try and behave in a way that disconfirms your experience. You know, to give you an example from an unrelated area, I was recently talking to a woman who had a granddaughter who had been deaf to the age of 6, and she then had cochlear implants put in, and suddenly for the first time in her life she could hear. And one of the things that I found so exciting about it is I thought all those neurological connections that existed up to 6 are now going to have to be rewired and reintegrated with sound.
Wow.
And so in a similar way, all those mental models really need to be rewired on the basis of self-knowledge, and the pathway to self-knowledge is to develop a habit or a response of consistently doing the harder thing.
So I can understand how you rewire it in a child, but say you've got a 45-year-old or a 50-year-old CEO, is it so hardwired that it's impossible to change, or can that same kind of rewiring occur with someone who may have leadership issues?
I guess in my 30 years experience working with individuals and many, many, many CEOs, I'm very optimistic that people can change at any stage of their life, and I mean fundamentally.
Okay.
You know, there's some neurological research that shows that one real serious humiliation in early in life can permanently alter part of the brain called the amygdala. But we also know that the frontal lobes can even override that. So something that's actually structural and unchanging in the brain that results from an early hurt can actually be overridden by the more recent areas of the brain to develop. So if that's true, I'm very optimistic that people have the potential to accomplish virtually anything that they're really committed to accomplishing.
Well, we do hear these stories of late bloomers and late achievers, so it must happen. I think that's very optimistic. That's good to know. So why is commitment to this more important now in the 21st century knowledge-based business world?
Well, you know, if you think of the time when we were an industrial country, you could certainly treat your workers in a fairly indifferent or callous manner and still have them turn that wrench and have some kind of quality control to ensure that they turned it tightly enough. But in the knowledge-based society, knowledge is actually the product of the information age. And while many industrial-age products could be produced at acceptable levels based on compliance, corporations of the future are going to increasingly have to rely on innovation to create competitive advantages in their markets. And genuine innovation is the product of inductive thinking that can't be coerced or demanded. The very process of creative thinking requires emotional buy-in. So to offer their best, knowledge workers of the future have to be committed to the vision and the mission of the company based on a solid identification between their company's growth and their own.
So as Groucho Marx would say, you've said the magic word, competitive advantage. Leadership, you know, that's my theme song, is having competitive advantage. So leaders who have good self-knowledge have better leadership and better teams and can increase their productivity, which gives them a gigantic competitive advantage if they take this step.
Exactly. They see through clear lenses, and they can identify in relation to customers, in relation to product development, where the competitive advantages lie, and they can create a culture that innovatively is on the cutting edge of competitive advantage as they compete with other corporations in their particular sector.
All right. Well, Bill, we're getting close to the end of the show, and I got two quick questions I want to ask you. You know, we're coming up upon election time, and our political leaders are presumably leaders. And so let's talk about them, not by name or not individually or not even by party, but what happens to people who keep around and then suddenly gain enormous power?
Well, I think there's a difference between leaders that are sort of selected based on their talents and skills and ability and people that seek power directly in their life as sort of a compensation for feeling inadequate or for feeling unwanted. And, you know, it's hard to say exactly what's in every leader's history, but if a leader had a history of, you know, being rejected or unwanted or those kinds of things, then you would think that they could seek power as a way of making themselves feel more valued and more important. And, you know, like any mental model that's based on the past, it's never going to produce the same qualitative results or long-term perspective or awareness of the impact of one's actions that a more realistic sense of personal mastery and empathy and the ability to see the impact of your behavior on others.
Yeah, so it's like a Band-Aid on a very bad long problem, the political power. So let me ask you a quick one because we're getting close to closing time here.
Okay.
So this is one we keep hearing about in the news. A movement like the Tea Party, might what's that represent today relative to these models you're talking about?
Well, I think that, I have this little statement that I often say that almost everything starts off good and then becomes bureaucratic. And I think the Tea Party is the early stage of some realization, some identification with a group of people that things are not what they had convinced themselves they were. And whether they're right or wrong or not really looking at the validity of their assumptions, it definitely is based on a realization that the world has changed around them and that now is the time for them to take some action. It's kind of like the Hegelian dialectic. You know, the pendulum goes too far one way and then too far the other, and somewhere in the middle is where most people are comfortable, but the middle keeps changing as we keep evolving and growing and our country changes and our world changes.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting the way you started out with this answer about everything starts out one way and ends up bureaucratic, and maybe the Tea Party will, if it's getting there or going there. It reminds me of a show we did a couple of weeks ago with Ian McDougall, who talks about the life cycles of an organization.
Exactly.
And all organizations ultimately get to that point, and it's up and back. And, you know, when you get into the deep, deep bureaucracy stage, you're no longer effective, which is pretty much what the Tea Party's saying of our government.
Exactly.
Then something else arises.
I'll never forget when I saw this, when Gorbachev stepped down at the Soviet Union, you know, they showed his mansion, which, you know, had about a 30-mile winding drive to it, and it was just this opulent kind of palace. And I thought, isn't that a far stretch from this revolution that supposedly was supposed to protect the serfs and the dignity to the people that were have-nots?
I hate to cut you off, but we're wrapping up here, and I am so happy you were able to join us today. This was fascinating, and I hope our listeners will take away some value from today's radio show, and maybe we'll have you on another time to give us some tips. So I just want to thank our listeners for coming to us today on Mind Your Biz Today. Visit our website, mindyourbiztoday.com or smartadvantage.com. We'd love to have you give us your 2 cents. And because voting day is next week, go out and vote. Do your civic duty one way or the other. We're all for being a society with a voice. So thank you, Vistage, for sponsoring us. See you soon.
You've been listening to Mind Your Biz Today with Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage, best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire. Tune in next Friday at 4:30 p.m. for another great program here on 880 The Biz.